Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Arguably the most mind-bending subway story since the taking of Pelham 123 unfolds today on Amazon. The Hunter's Anthology is the program, Nikki Akmal is the producer, and Robert Smithline is the writer-director. Both join me next. Here's a question. Can a chicken be no chicken in these uncertain times? You can get an answer next Thursday on Peacock when Archibald's Next Big Thing Is Here arrives there. Coming your way next half hour, executive producer Eric Fogel. Also ahead, how did Clarice do? More horror at Cinedigm, our classic trivia question of the week, and interactive TV gets in shape. That's our takeaway of the week. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker Internet Radio, and presented on iHeartRadio's Podcast Network, Amazon Music, and Verbal. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details, including a brand-new President's Day offer, coming your way later in the program. 29 degrees at the top of the hour, and on this Friday afternoon, we welcome you. The program all about TV's current and future. Wonderful guests coming away in the hour ahead, and we invite you to be part of the program. It's so simple. Pick up the phone, use your voice, and use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number is good anywhere you are catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. Chat room is open for business. Simon Apple 04 by name is where it is, and you can find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Use the phone or the room, either way, you're involved. And while the promo is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk speaker to in screen. Follow the instructions, and other people will be live with you. Our pair from the Hunter's Anthology on Amazon join us from New York and New Jersey, both sides of the Hudson River, after these news notes. Smart TV programmer Cinedigm is making a double-service dip in horror genre television. The company launched ad-supported service Blay Disgusting last fall. Now this afternoon comes the purchase of subscription venture Screambox. Cinedigm will offer Screambox solo or paired with Fandom Network Con TV for a monthly fee. Also, Screambox's output of movies and TV content will be doubled over the next 3 months. Silence of the Lambs-inspired drama Clarice started solid on CBS last night. The new drama, which was first in the 10 p.m. time period among broadcast networks. Critics praised the title performance by Rebecca Breeds and were mixed on the first episode's production overall. Again, the show is on 10 o'clock on Thursday nights now on CBS. And if you missed our terrific interview with Jenny Lumet, the daughter of the celebrated filmmaker Cindy Lumet and the executive producer and writer of Clarice, you can check it out now at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised, as well as our various podcast affiliates. In other CBS developments, a miniseries, CSI Revival, appears close to a go. Sources say casting on the project's main roles is almost wrapped. No comment from CBS. Now some quickies. Academy Award-winning writer-producer Akiva Goldsman from A Beautiful Mind fame and actress-comedian Tiffany Haddish are co-organizing The Bardess, a miniseries by 16th century poet of color Amelia Bassano, who reportedly was involved with William Shakespeare's writing. E-unscripted TV miniseries Or Real, exploring the unscripted scene with Andy Cohen as host and executive producer, will start March 25th. Disney Plus will mark Earth Day 2021 on April 22nd with the debut of Secrets of the Whales. National Geographic will produce this 4-episode event. And Rosalind Sanchez and Kate Del Castillo will co-star in Armas de Mujer, Peacock's first original Spanish-language dramedy, coming later this year. And that is news notes for today. Our first guests are involved in a new series that premiered today on Amazon. It's called The Hunter's Anthology. It's a mix of various genres, from supernatural to subway terror. Joining us live to talk about it is from here in New York, its producer, Nikki Akmal. Nikki, thanks for coming aboard.
Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. And joining both of us from the other side of the Hudson River, New Ever Jersey, namely Fairmont, Jersey, is the writer and director of the program, Robert Smithline. Robert, thanks for coming.
Thank you for having me.
It is a pleasure. Nikki, we'll start with you. What got this project off the ground?
Well, Rob and I had been working with each other on another project as well, and we decided we wanted to do something that was going to come out and much quicker than we were planning on. And so I met with Rob, and we discussed the script, and we decided it would be perfect to do this because it's New York, it's a subway, and it would get people interested.
And Robert, I understand that the Twilight Zone was at least some of the inspiration for this.
Yeah, no, that's true. This is an anthology with a bunch of short stories in it. So Twilight Zone definitely was a big influence because of they're all supernatural and they all tend to have some of the similar storylines of some of the episodes, but I try to put my own twist on it.
And what was the twist? What did you once you decided I'm going to do this multi-genre subway story, what was the twist that you ultimately came up with?
Well, I mean, the biggest twist in the whole story, because it's really an ongoing subway story, but there's also separate stories within it that are about the same length and running time. But the idea was to have a mystery, to have something to keep people guessing during the time that they listen to all these short stories. So Mac, the demon hunter, who's trying to find out who the demon is able to look into their souls, get clues from each of these stories so that the big twist at the end, which is who is the demon, would be revealed.
You know, Nikki, when I first heard about this program, it reminded me a little bit of the new ABC game show, The Hustler, hosted by Craig Ferguson, which involves a bunch of people who gather together, they're contestants, and one of them is nicknamed The Hustler because he knows all the answers, and the idea of the show is to try to ferret out the hustler before the hustler hustles you for the win.
Well, this is, I guess, very similar to that. Basically, we're trying to find out who the demon is. So everyone is joining the hunt in order to find out who the demon is. And there are clues throughout the episodes as to who it may be.
Robert, go more into the story. Where does this take place in the subway, and how do these people find themselves sort of sharing their various tales and where the demon hunter comes from also?
Well, it starts off where you follow the demon hunter, and he's walking around, and you get the feeling that maybe he has a feeling that he needs to be at a certain place at a certain time. And when he does show up on the subway, which it could be really anywhere in Manhattan, he starts seeing people and getting this feeling. He has supernatural powers, and he knows when people have had supernatural memories, and he puts them together, and he has to figure out which one supernatural memories, I guess, are evil memories. So he waits for everybody to get on and off until he has everybody where he wants them, and that's when he stops the train and doesn't let them out and tells them why he's there.
And Nikki, it seems that the great idea about this anthology is that you can take the stories anywhere. You can once you hear the stories from the individual characters in the subway train, you can they can be in any location anywhere you want. They can be any type of story. It could be romantic, could be horror, could be supernatural, could be parallel universe. You know, whatever. Was that one of the sort of ideas you had in mind? You and Robert had in mind in putting this together.
It actually was. I mean, he had wanted to do separate stories for each character, and so that's exactly what he did. And we've also opened it up to a way where we can actually have other seasons that occur in different places.
Because after all, he's a demon hunter, so you know, there's I'm sure plenty of demons out there.
Not the only demon.
Absolutely. We're talking about The Hunter's Anthology. It's the brand-new series that premiered earlier today on Amazon. Of course, if you have a smart TV set or a smart TV device, including Amazon Fire TV, chances are you can catch the show right now. And we've got two of the key people involved in the making of the program. We have producer Nikki Akmal and writer-director Robert Smithline. They're both with us live. Nikki here in New York and Robert from Fairmont, New Jersey, right here this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Tom Abbott with you live from New York. Delighted to have you with us on this Friday before Valentine's Day, President's Day, Chinese New Year weekend. If you're celebrating any of those, congratulations. We hope the weekend ahead is going to be great for you and warm with the people you love too. And we thank you for tuning us in. If you have a question or comment for our guest, don't be shy. Raise the voice, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. But because it's President's Day weekend, we won't be with you on our regular Monday at 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific time period, but we will be with you 24 hours later on Tuesday, and we're going to open up the week, our week, with a big 90-minute episode for you. You know, there's a lot of multi-channel bundles that are now on smart TV sets and smart devices, Pluto TV, Philo TV, Tubi, etc. Well, we got one of them for you on Tuesday, leading things off. It's Xumo, X-U-M-O, and we'll have the key person in charge, Chief Executive Officer Colin Petrie Norris. And then we'll introduce you to a company called Enthusiast Gaming that just came out with a new gaming application on Samsung Smart TVs that's called BCC. We'll talk to the founder and president of the company, Menashe Kirstenbaum. And finally, we'll have the executive producer of a controversial miniseries that started earlier this month on HBO. It's called The Lady and the Dale. His name is Andre Gaines. Wait till you hear about what he did to make this show happen and the subject behind it. That's all coming up Tuesday, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. You know, Nikki, I mentioned in the tease the Take Your Pill in 1, 2, 3, and which was recently on Turner Classic Movies, a really amazing film, which was shot in large part in the New York City subway system. And Joseph Sargent, the wonderful director, who was one of the best, maybe the best made-for-TV movie director ever. I've seen his interviews on YouTube where he said that he had a devil of a time, speaking of demon and devil, he had a demon of a time working with the New York City subway system to that film. What was it like to approach the subway management, the MTA, with doing this series?
Well, we actually didn't shoot on the New York City subway. It was much too hard for us to navigate that situation. So we actually shot at a transit museum up in Kingston, an old subway cart that was available.
I didn't know that. I know there's a transit museum in Brooklyn, not far from where I live, and it's available to the public. Talk about this transit museum. How did you use it? Where is it in Kingston is, and how did you use it?
It's in Kingston. I don't remember the exact address of the location, but we were looking for a location to shoot in. We were also talking to the transit high school, but ended up deciding to go and shoot up in Kingston. We approached them, and they were okay with it. So we went up there, and we shot there for 3 days. We actually shot there in the hottest part of the summer, and it was outside, so we had to tarp the entire subway. So it was very, very hot in the subway.
And, Robert, in terms of writing this, how did the pandemic impact how you not only wrote this series but also directed it?
Well, actually, it didn't, because I had written it before the pandemic, and we had shot it before the pandemic even started, so it really didn't affect it at all. But I do look back on it now, and there's so many things in the series that could never happen now, so I'm glad we got it done before it came.
Who are the talk about the cast members that you had on this series? How did you pick the Demon Hunter? How did you assemble your cast? And what was like the main marching order, Robert, that you gave them in terms of bringing out their characters?
You know, we have a very large cast. It's really an ensemble, because we have seven people on the train, and then within each of their stories, we have another 2 to 4 or 5. So, as far as finding the Demon Hunter, we had auditions, and I really just wanted to find somebody that was a really big, tough guy that could really take control of the train. And Taylor August plays him. He was great. And he really pulled off a good Mac. I'd love to go through all of them, but I wouldn't have time. But we just have a really good ensemble, and every character is very different. We have one character that's very funny, and his episode's a little more lighthearted and with some dark tones. They're all very different, and so I approached them all very differently. But as far as the Demon Hunter, that's how I approached it.
Nikki, how were you and Robert were able to get this series pitched successfully to Amazon?
We actually had a distributor, Indie Rights, and they're the ones that approached Amazon and got us onto Amazon. We finished shooting before the pandemic, and we finished all the post stuff about 2 months ago, and we approached Indie Rights, and they came on board, and that was that.
Mm-hmm. What was the for you, Nikki? What was the most challenging part of producing this miniseries, especially one where it's anthology in nature? So you have different characters who take control each episode, and you have the ongoing story of the Demon Hunter trying to find the demon.
Well, we were working with a very small budget, so we were pulling in a lot of favors and trying to navigate all the different situations, wearing many hats to make it happen. This kind of was a project of love for both me and Robert to try to get it out to everyone to see.
Mm-hmm. Robert, how about you? When you're dealing with the budget you deal with, when you deal with the circumstances, you're shooting upstate New York, you have so much time to do it. How do you work your script? How do you work your direction?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, a lot of it is time constraints when it comes to having a low budget. You know, you only have a certain amount of time at these locations. They're very hard to find. So once you're there, depending on the situation, you may get more or less takes, you know, to go through it. But luckily, especially in the subway conditions, which was very tough because it was hot and we were having also, you know, we had rain landing on the subway car, which was really outside, making noise. Those kind of things, you know, I would stay up at night, reduce the amount of shots that I needed and just try to get everything I could and do it in very small amount of takes in that situation specifically. And luckily the actors were just, they were just dead on pretty much every take, and it was enough, and we were able to catch up.
Mm-hmm. And Robert, staying with you, when you have that kind of a situation, how do you work with your cinematographer, your production design people, especially if they're doing like you multitasking to pull this off?
Well, I mean, the plan for the subway, for example, I mean, it's really, the DP has so much to do with it. Our DP is Ben Wolf, and he did a great job with just figuring out locations, finding the right shots, and the only shots where you wouldn't see the other camera. Because we had a tea shop that was, you know, which really is the lust potion shop in the story, and it was tight. I mean, you could only fit the camera in certain places, but if you watched it, you would never know. So it's really, you know, as far as the crew, they just, you know, you just try to guide them and tell them what you want, and they just seem to figure it out. They all did a great job.
Mm-hmm. Nikki, what kind of cooperation did you get from the people in Kingston and the officials in the area?
They were very helpful. I mean, we shot in Kingston for 3 of the days, just the subway set, and they were welcoming, and the transit museum up there was welcoming as well, which is kind of good because in the city it gets to be much more difficult because so much is being shot here that people are tired of shoots. So when you go out of the city, people welcome you and help you out and give you breaks basically.
Yeah. For either of you, did the transit authority up in Kingston ever raise an issue about how their image was going to be portrayed or how the subway issue was going to be? And I mention that because going back to Take It Poland 1-2-3, one of the things that Joseph Sargent, the director, said was that there was a big issue with the transit authority, now the Metro MTA, about how the authority was going to be portrayed and the fact that you had these hijackers, if you've seen the movie, these hijackers you know, get into the subway system in the first place and demand $1 million and try to screw up the subway system. And in fact, because of that, Sargent and the production company making the film had to do several things, including the at the end, if you watch the end of the movie, there is a special graphic on screen saying, you know, this kind of thing will never happen in a subway system kind of situation. So that's to sort of ease everybody's fears that, no, when you go on the subway, you're not going to, you know, face a hijacking.
Yeah. Well, I'll take this. Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, that kind of movie is so different than what we were doing. And if I remember right, they were very laid back about what we were doing and what, you know, what was actually in the content. There's really not much action in it. There's some, but it's mostly dialogue. And from what I remember, they really never brought that up, and they were just really helpful, I thought, and super laid back.
Yeah, they had no issues whatsoever. They gave us the run of the area basically. They gave us the keys for the weekend, left, and we just shot.
Yeah.
There you go. Hey, MTA. Pay attention to Kingston up there. Next time someone wants to shoot a film or TV series in the subway system, you may get some nice pointers from the Kingston officials up there. We'll see. Anyway, we are here on Tomorrow Be Televised this Friday afternoon. We're talking with Nikki Akmal. She is the producer of the Hunters Anthology, and the writer-director, Robert Smithline. The program is now running on Amazon, which means if you have a smart TV set or a smart TV device like Amazon Fire TV, you can catch that program right now. And we'll talk about the future of the program shortly. In the meantime, if you have a question or comment on our meeting minutes with our guests, give them a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Next Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised, we'll celebrate the 400th lifetime made-for-TV movie. It's called The Long Island Serial Killer. It premieres next Saturday night on that network. The executive producer is the host of Inside Edition, which you can see every weeknight on broadcast stations across the country, Deborah Norville. And the other major executive producer will be our guest, Elizabeth Stephen, along with the director of the film, Dan Brooks. And by the way, the film is running 10 years after the case really came to light that Norville covered extensively at that time on Inside Edition. That's Elizabeth Stephen and Sam Brooks from The Long Island Serial Killer, that is Lifetime's 400th made-for-TV movie, premieres next Saturday night there. We'll have them the day before, right here next Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Nikki, how did you and Robert meet in the first place? What got your paths together?
We met through another producer friend of mine. We were planning on shooting a feature film, Robert, and Curtis Smith, and we decided that Rob and I decided we wanted to shoot this first. So we started to go over the script and look at what we could do with it. Our initial plan was to do little 3-minute episodes and post them on YouTube to get people interested. But then when we started shooting everything, we realized we had something much better. So we continued shooting and decided to go with Amazon.
Mm-hmm. And Robert, is this your first time doing TV series writing? If not, what have you done before? How'd you get into the field?
I did many short films along the years, and I've been an editor for many years. So as far as TV, I usually write for film. I usually write features. So this was actually originally written like a feature, and it's about the length of a long feature if you put all the episodes together. But we felt that in order to kind of keep moving and keep up with the funding and have stuff to show, that it would be good to do them in pieces. And then eventually we were lucky enough to be able to put it all together and have a finished series.
Nikki, can you still believe it that, you know, hey, you're now one of the latest producers, particularly women producers, to have a TV series on the air? And it's happening at a time where we're seeing more and more women, particularly first-time women and women of color, being able to produce, create, write, direct their own television shows.
It's a great feeling. It's a great feeling to be among one of the few women who are now getting to that point. It's been a long road.
And Robert, you know, where do you see this anthology series going? If Amazon gives you the green light for a second season, future seasons, how do you want to expand the series?
I've written two more seasons, at least. I have more, you know, in my head. But basically what it would be following Mac the Demon Hunter from one situation to the next. So another group of suspects trying to figure out who the demon is and, you know, in this place that he's trapped them in, and so on. And it would just be an anthology where you get all these supernatural stories within his mission of trying to find who the demon is in different places.
Nikki, while you wait for Amazon's verdict, are you and Robert teaming up on another project? Are you doing something on your own in terms of television? What's the future for you in terms of what's next?
Well, we're hoping for season 2, but I also have a couple other projects that are in the mix that I'm producing. I mostly produce feature films. This is the first TV series that I produced. So I'm working with another person on another possible TV script and then the features that I've done. So we're waiting to see.
The program is The Hunter's Anthology, and it's on right now on Amazon, which means if you have a smart TV set or smart TV device, including Amazon Fire TV, chances are you can see it. For more details about the program online, here's where you go, www.amazon.com. or www.amazon.com/prime. That's www.amazon.com or www.amazon.com/prime. The Hunter's Anthology, hopefully the first of many seasons, now on Amazon, available on most smart TV sets and smart TV devices. producer Nikki Akmal, writer-director Robert Smithline. Thank you both for joining us. Congratulations on getting your series on the air. Hopefully a long run in store and much, much more in the TV world, too.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Nikki. And Robert, have a fantastic President's Day weekend.
You too.
You too. Bye-bye.
Nikki Akmal joining us live from New York. Robert Smithline joining us live from Fairmont, New Jersey. This half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Classic trivia question coming your way shortly. But first, some words from our fine friends at Audible.com. We started off the month with Maggie Friedman, the executive producer and showrunner of the new Netflix drama Firefly Lane. Well, the book that started that series, well, of the same name, by Christian Hanna, now that is available as an audiobook, and today you can get it. How? Through a one-month trial to Audible.com. Remember, Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, and inspiration. There's over 200,000 titles you can choose from, and you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you're hearing us on right now, at Blog Talk Radio, Speaker Tuner Radio, and our various podcast affiliates, including Verbal, iHeartRadio, and Amazon Music. And just sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. It's audibletrial.com/televised. You get one free audiobook, that one-month trial, plus great customer service from Audible's parent, Amazon.com. Oh, and if you're already an Amazon Prime member, guess what? You can get two audiobooks for the trial of one, and one of those audiobooks could be for the growing catalog of Audible Originals. It's everything from original audio productions and podcasts, best of Broadway, off-Broadway, and regional theater, and great one-woman and one-man performances. And that's not all. If you don't want the trial and you just want to go right ahead and subscribe, well, Audible's got a great President's Day deal for you, where if you go right ahead and subscribe, you can get at least the first 6 months of your subscription at a great discount. For all details on that, just go to audibletrial.com/televised. That's audibletrial.com/televised. And no matter what, whether you go right to a subscription or a one-month trial, either way, it makes a great gift for you or someone you love, especially during this President's Day, Valentine's Day, Lunar New Year, Chinese New Year weekend. So how about making this the weekend that you or somebody you love can find out how audible.com can transform the way you hear the world. Promise you, it's a great, great deal. Now time for our classic trivia question of the week. We have two book prizes in play, if you have the correct answer, both from former TWBT guests, from David Tice of Hub Entertainment Research, The Genius Box, How the Idiot Box Got Smart and Is Changing the Television Business. And from our Elvis expert, Frank D'Onofrio. By the way, happy weekend to you, Frank, and your lovely wife and family. It is Elvis, the King of Rock and Roll, available on Amazon. Here's the question. Who played John Adams on the Emmy-winning 1976 PBS series The Adams Chronicles? Who played John Adams on the PBS 1976 Emmy-winning series The Adams Chronicles? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and your address. If you're first with the correct answer, you'll win both of those books, and you'll become our second winner of 2021. So let's see if we can make it happen. And if we don't get a winner by the end today, we'll post the question tomorrow morning on my Facebook page and my Twitter page. Facebook is Simon Applebaum, and Twitter is at UBC Simon TWBT. By the way, we just broke 745 people who now get our Twitter feed with latest TV news and other things as well. So congratulations on that. And let's see if we get that winner. So, again, if you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. One more time, here is the question. Who played John Adams on the Emmy-winning PBS miniseries, The Adams Chronicles? simonapple04@yahoo.com. If we don't get the answer by the end of today, post it tomorrow morning. It happens just about the weekend. On Facebook, at Simon Applebaum. On Twitter, at UBC Simon TWET. However we get the win, remember, you got to play in, so do so. And all the very best. When we come back, the person who put Celebrity Deathmatch on the air many moons ago on MTV, he'll be with us. His name is Eric Fogel, and now he's putting on a brand new Peacock miniseries. It's animated, and it's called Archibald's Next Big Thing Is Here. And we'll talk about that next big thing after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You're connected to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tuner.com. Together reaching over 50 million listeners around the world every month and growing. BTR is your home for off-the-cuff radio. It's wonderful music, great conversation, and much, much more. Off-the-cuff radio, catch it tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. That's 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, right here on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, that's BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Well, right, for the second half of Tomorrow Be Televised for this Friday afternoon before a big holiday weekend. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. Delighted to have you with us. Got a great guest coming away in the half hour ahead. And if you got a question or comment for that person, make the call, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04, my name. Our good friend Rick Webb is already in the room. My next guest broke into, and I mean really broke into, the animation scene in a huge way with the long-running MTV series Celebrity Deathmatch. Well, he is back as executive producer of a brand-new Peacock animated miniseries featuring the terrific, multi-talented Tony Hale. It's called Archibald's Next Big Thing is Here. Joining us live from Los Angeles in an internet radio exclusive, Eric Fogel. Eric, thank you for making the time.
Hey, Simon. Thanks for having me on. Really excited.
It is a pleasure to have you on. So what's it like for you to be back in the animation game many moons after the big success you had with Celebrity Deathmatch?
Well, I never left animation, but it's definitely really fun to be back with this particular show. It's been such a joy and a blast working with Tony Hale and a lot of talented writers and animators, and I feel really lucky and really proud of the show.
Before we get to the show and working with Tony, Eric, what do you think about this incredibly explosive animation scene? Because we have Netflix, we have Hulu, we have Amazon, we have Peacock, we have HBO Max, and it seems that all these services, particularly these new mega content services that popped up over the last year, they are really deep into having all sorts of animation, kids, family, adults, and it seems that the whole marketplace is exploding.
It does. It's amazing. I couldn't be happier. Just so many opportunities and so many different ways to tell stories in animation. This is like an explosion like I've never seen before, and I'm thrilled to be part of it.
Well, how did you and Tony Hale connect to make this series?
I was brought in, so it's actually about 4 years to the day. 4 years ago, I was invited in to meet with Tony and a couple of writers, Jake Moffitt, Drew Champion, who had helped develop Tony's book, his children's book, into a series form. And I was brought in pretty early on to direct what would have been the pilot for this series. And right away, I just was taken with this pilot script that Jake and Drew wrote. The book was really charming as well. I felt like the book was a great jumping off point for what could become a really kind of fun and fantastical series. And I started, just kind of focusing on the pilot, but pretty early on, I felt like I could sort of expand my role on the show as a kind of more seasoned animation guy and really sort of oversee a lot of aspects of the production of the show.
Well, when you decide to take a book like that and a character like Archibald, this chicken who is trying to survive in these contemporary times, what choices do you make as an animator, as an executive producer, to bring a character like that to life?
Good question. The show has, a few key elements to it. And at the heart is this character, Archibald, right? And so because Tony's doing the voice, you immediately have this brilliant comedic mind at work. So you really want to embrace that. So filmmaker and an animator, my first thought is how do we maximize the comedy and the funny? You want to be, keeping this chicken front and center as much as you can. He's such a fun, funny character. He has a physicality. He has a range of emotion. And, Tony's voice is there kind of driving that. So you just, first and foremost, you want to embrace all of those things. And really, secondly, but equally important, is the heart of this character and the heart of this show. And, you know, Archibald is a character that is, you know, just so open to the world, to new experiences, to different types of people, or, you know, different types of characters and experiences and adventures, that it just makes for such an engaging character. And so, you know, really sort of following those journeys and finding those emotional moments was as important as finding the comedic moments in getting this show to kind of click and work.
Did Tony point you in that direction, or give you any other guidance in terms of, well, here's my creation, here's how I'd like you to consider treating it?
He was very, you know, he had a very clear vision of who that character was. And, you know, we talked a lot early on about what the character would do, what he wouldn't do. And, you know, there was a little bit of sort of finding it in the beginning, in those early days when we were, you know, breaking stories. And he was there to guide us and to help us along and to tell us, you know, yeah, Archibald, this is sort of out of his realm of things that Archibald might say or do. Try it like this. And, you know, we sort of fell into a groove after that, sort of figuring out how, you know, getting into the brain of that character and sort of figuring out the choices he would make.
We're talking about Peacock's new animated series, Archibald's Next Big Thing Is Here, based on the best-selling book by Tony Hale, the creator of the series. He's also the main voice of the series, too. And we have Eric Fogel, the executive producer of the program, and he is with us live from Los Angeles, California, this half hour right here on Tamavi Televised. The series, by the way, premieres next Thursday on Peacock. It was available on smart TV sets, smart TV devices, and in some cases, through your local cable operators, especially those of you that are subscribers of Comcast Cable all over the U.S. of A. And if you have a question or comment for Eric, why not ring it in? Make the conversation go, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04. My name, our very good friend from Philadelphia, Rick Webb, is back with us. Don't forget, we won't be with you Monday, which we usually are because of President's Day, but we'll be with you 24 hours later at our regular time, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. We got a big 90-minute show for you. First of all, we will focus on the multicultural bundle, Zumo, with its Chief Executive Officer, Colleen Petrie Norris. That bundle available on many smart TV sets and smart devices. Also, we'll meet the president of a company called Enthusiast Gaming that recently premiered a new app on Samsung smart TV sets called BCC. His name is Menasha Kassenbaum. He'll be joining us, or Kassenbaum, I should say. So that'll be our second guest. And finally, rescheduled from earlier, we'll have the executive producer of a controversial HBO miniseries called The Lady and the Dale, Andre Gaines. That's all coming up Tuesday. That's Tuesday, not Monday, Tuesday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Eric, what kind of situations does Archibald get into?
Well, in this new season premiering on Peacock next week, we decided to, you know, expand the world a little bit, get a little weirder, a little more, you know, lean into the fantastical a little bit more. So these 6 episodes that are premiering, among them you'll see Archibald stumble on a shrink ray. So his sister Loy is an inventor, and she creates a shrink ray. Naturally, Archibald wants to play with this thing and see, you know, what it does, and he accidentally shrinks himself and his sister. And we've got a whole kind of microcosm style adventure where they are, you know, trapped in the house trying to get from A to B. And, you know, through this minuscule POV lens, we get to have a full crazy adventure there, which is really fun. And you know, just to back up a little bit and say that what is so fun for me as a storyteller and, you know, exec producer on Archibald is that every episode feels a whole different adventure. And, you know, you've got the constant at the center of it is Archibald through everything. But each story feels like, you know, a different genre, a different sort of approach, and we'll, you know, which is just so fun as a storyteller, because you can tell these kind of wild, crazy stories, but, you know, at other times you can sort of slow things down and tell a really warm, heartfelt story. So we'll do something crazy, but then we might tell a story about a death and get into the idea of what is it like to grieve and to mourn, and how different characters grieve differently. And so you've got really different ends of the spectrum in terms of the stories that we're telling.
Stay with that for a moment, Eric. How do you mm-hmm. take a subject like grief and mm-hmm. you make it as sensitive as possible and yet respecting both the subject and the viewer?
Mm. Yeah, we found a way in with a particular character in a story. So just to sort of paint the tableau here. So there's a tree, a very, very old tree, and the tree has, you know, come to the end of its life, and it's this beautiful tree that was cherished by everyone. You know, everyone loved this tree, and we basically treat it like a character, and we do, you know, like a funeral sort of as the way into this story. And we discover that one of the characters, one of Archibald's siblings, Sage, he discovers that he's never cried before. And we don't know why. And he thinks, what's wrong with me? It's something, you know, why can't I cry? And so that begins a journey to try to figure out how, you know, why can't Sage cry? And how can we find a way to make him cry? And we get to this beautiful place by the end where, and I don't want to spoil anything, but he makes a discovery sort of on his own. And it's a journey that Archibald is there with him and helps him and supports him through the whole thing. But at the end, it's, you know, this realization that, you know, when it's your moment to grieve, that's, you know, a really personal thing. And it's
you
a
know,
beautiful
the
story.
The more you talk about Archibald, the more you get a sense that it's a very, what I call a wide-open character. Some of the best animated characters on television throughout the years are characters that you appreciate or you come to enjoy and love simply because they are so, no matter what kind of shape the world is or the world around them is, they're so wide open to possibility. They're so wide open to, I want to see the good in life. I want to see the good around me. As opposed to the craziness.
Yeah, he is a character that I think that the world really needs right now. And it's just so important to have characters like this to sort of help us, you know, at times. So I'm really glad you said that. Yeah, I totally agree.
Did you have to produce the show during the pandemic? And if so, I understand that what's been one of the interesting outcomes of the pandemic has been that with animation, it's really helped improve the animation process. Even though people aren't together, it seems that they're still able to accomplish making the show as opposed to having to go through all sorts of protocols as live-action shows are.
Simon, it's the craziest thing because about a year ago, I traveled to the Philippines to visit the animation studio that was going to be animating the show. And I came, so that was in March. I came back, I went, you know, started going back, you know, day to day at the studio in Glendale at DreamWorks. And a week later, we were shut down. You know, we were all locked down. And so it's almost like, you know, I compare it to the blip in Endgame, you know, where you have this bustling, thriving production, and then the next day it's just a ghost town. So some panic did set in because I said to myself, how are, you know, I met with hundreds of animators over in Manila at a studio called Top Draw that was doing our animation. And I thought to myself, how are these individuals going to be working from home in, you know, in some cases in sort of remote locations and maybe not with the best internet bandwidth and things like this. And I was nervous. But my fears were quickly allayed, and I was, you know, really pleasantly surprised to discover that these guys were totally up for this and ready, and really they knocked it out of the park. So I'm not sure if I answered your question. Did I fully answer your question? It was a little scary, but it's, yeah, I mean, working in this way, it's really different, but I mean, I'm so grateful to be able to spend this last year continuing to make this show and not having the quality suffer at all.
How would you describe the animation style?
It's a 2D show, but we, or at least, you know, when I sort of set out, you know, when I sat down to storyboard the pilot, I took more of a cinematic approach to the storytelling and kind of figured out that whatever was going to best tell the story. So there are times where things get a little more action heavy, and we definitely lean into more of the cinematic tricks in terms of moving the camera, in terms of, you know, dynamic angles. But there are other times where, you know, you want the comedy to play, where you can kind of just pull the camera back and lock the camera down and allow these really, really funny characters to just do what they do physically and let the characters do the work. So the show is this really fun balance of comedy, adventure, and heart. And I think, you know, animation-wise, we've really taken it to this new level that I think it's just so endearing. It's so fun to watch, and it's a beautiful show. Our art director, Sierra Lewis, did a fantastic job designing the world of this show. There's a warmth, there's a tactile quality. I don't know if you've if you've noticed that Archibald's sweater has a very kind of lived-in textural quality to it, which just makes him feel sort of relatable and real. So that's weird.
I'm also noticing that more and more the animation, whether it's computer-generated, 2D, 3D, is more sophisticated than ever. They can do all sorts of, as you said, cinematic things with it. You can even have two styles. You have sequences where you have both computer animation and 2D or cell in the same sequence. And some of the special effects you can get from that combination or combinations like it is quite amazing.
Yeah, you can do anything, and it is amazing that you can sort of combine assets and combine techniques. We did an episode last season where Archibald goes to visit a lake. It was basically like a ball pit lake made entirely of, you know, those plastic balls that you see in like children's play areas. And so imagine an entire lake filled with these balls, and we're starting to figure out how are we going to – we can't do this in 2D. It's just too much, you know, movement. So we were able to use a CG approach to fabricating this lake made of plastic balls, and it worked out great. But it merged perfectly with the 2D animation. Worked really well.
Well, Eric, we're going to animate a call because it's coming up right now. Hello, you're on Tomorrow Be Televised. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hey, Simon. It's Rick Webb calling from Philadelphia.
Rick, good to have you aboard. Eric Fogel is with you right now.
Hey, Rick.
Hey, Eric. Hopefully these questions aren't too tough on you, but two quick questions. One is, now that you're moving from Netflix to Peacock, have they pressured you to have less chickens on the show and now more peacocks? And also, and then my second question is, what was the thinking behind having Archibald be a chicken rather than a like little rooster?
Okay, so let's see. To sort of judiciously answer that first question, we were not pressured to make any adjustments to the characters. However, there may theoretically be an episode, a future episode, featuring a peacock character.
I'll be looking forward to that.
I can tease, I think. And the second half, what was the second part? Sorry.
Just what the thinking was behind him being a chicken rather than a younger rooster.
You know, that's probably more of a question for Tony. And I'm not 100% sure what the answer is. He's a skinny chicken. Some people think he looks kind of like more like a duck, but you know, he's that lovable yellow chicken that just kind of pops. And yeah, I don't know what it is about yellow animated characters seem to do really, really well. You know, SpongeBob, so he's in good company.
Yeah, Homer Simpson, definitely.
Yeah,
well, cool.
Yeah,
well, continued success. I'm definitely going to be checking it out, and I'll be looking for more peacocks. So take care. Thanks, Simon.
You're very welcome, Rick, and thanks for giving the marketing promotion and everybody else at Peacock something to think about for another season. Rick Graham, our friend from Philadelphia on Tomorrow Televised. Rick, thanks. Have a super, super holiday weekend. Eric, you have been around this animation scene for quite a while. People still remember you from Celebrity Deathmatch. What keeps you going? You know, how do shows like this keep you going in animation? As I mentioned, a time when there's like so many possibilities and so many places you can do animation on television.
For me, I'm always looking for what is that next project that's going to challenge me, that's going to help me grow as an animator, as a filmmaker, ideally as a human being. So, yeah, I mean, I'm always looking for what is that show. And with Archibald, that was sort of my first foray into that kid space, you know, that 8 to 11-year-old kid space. You know, I had done a lot in the kind of more like the primetime and more a little more adult venue, but I always knew I wanted to work on a kid's show, and so I just, you know, again, I just felt like I kind of won the lottery when I found Archibald, and when Archibald found me, and you just don't find shows like this a lot, so it's turned out to be kind of just a perfect matchup, and yeah, I just feel so lucky.
Archibald's next big thing is here. It comes to Peacock next Thursday, February 18th, and Peacock is available on smart TV sets and smart TV devices, both in advertising-free as well as advertise-supported versions. Don't forget, they're not only available on smart TV sets and devices, but in many areas available on a local cable system near you, especially those run by Comcast, the nation's largest cable operator. For more details about the program online, here's where you go, www.peacocktv.com. That's www.peacocktv.com. Archibald's next big thing is here. Premieres next Thursday. Eric Fogle, the executive producer of the series, thank you for joining us. It's been a pleasure all the way. Good luck to you, Tony, and everybody on the series. Hopefully a great long run at Peacock. And keep us posted when the Peacock episode comes. We'd love to have you back when it is.
Thanks, Simon. I had a blast, and I'd love to come back.
Same here. You got it. Take care. Have a wonderful weekend.
You too.
Eric Fogle, executive producer of Archibald's Next Big Thing, is here joining us live from Los Angeles. Before we leave you for the day and the weekend, here's our regular Friday feature, the takeaway of the week, a development that takes place during the week that we think you should take away from as something impacting the future of what you watch and use on television. And this week it's this. Interactive TV is busting loose, and fitness programming may be one of the leading ways to go. If you listened to us on Monday, we had Karina Kogan from Peloton, and Peloton has been leading the way in this idea of interactive fitness TV services, where whether you're using a Peloton bike or a treadmill or just doing jumping jacks and push-ups and sit-ups or dancing, whatever, you can watch on your television set, be interactive with the Peloton trainers, and do all sorts of wonderful things as well and check your progress along the way. Well, they're not the only ones. There's also Apple with Apple Fitness Plus. Samsung's going to launch a service called Smart Trainer later this year. And this week, Beachbody, which has been advertising itself lately on television in various places, including last weekend, Super Bowl weekend, and I saw an ad for them a couple of days ago. Well, earlier this week, they announced a deal to join forces with a SPAC. You know, that's the growing number of, they call Special Project Acquisition Corps. They usually have, like, IPOs looking for an IPO. It's a public offering. Well, they're going to go public through a SPAC, and they're going to get $225 million on it, and they're going to use it to expand what they're doing with smart TV sets and smart devices. Bottom line, interactive fitness is going to be maybe a entry point for much more interactive services, whether it's interactive lifestyle, interactive original scripted content and unscripted content, education, health, other services, and even gaming and so forth. So keep your eye on what these fitness services are doing. They may encourage you to be more interactive, not just with their services, but the whole scope of interactive TV coming your way, we think, in the year ahead. And one more thing. Yesterday, when Magnolia Network announced that they were going to be, at least early on, part of Discovery Plus, they announced a interesting Chip and Joanna Gaines doing that. They also introduced a new, coming this summer, an interactive app that will allow you to take interactive home repair lessons, call up recipes, improvement tips, and even order merchandise. So, like I say, this interactive revolution in television is just keep on keeping on. Thanks to all of our guests today and all week long. We really appreciate them and appreciate you being here. Don't forget, after President's Day, we are back on Tuesday, and joining us then will be the head of Xumo, Colin Petrie Norris, Enthusiastic Gaming founder and president, Menashe Kestenbaum, and from the controversial HBO series, The Lady and the Dale, executive producer, Andre Gaines. It's all coming up Tuesday, 3:15 Pacific, right here on Tamarvi Televised. Came in late on today's program. Want to catch up an episode to reach? Go to the homepage, blogs.com/televised. Check us out on podcast. And don't forget, we love to hear from you. So email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Find me on Facebook. Follow me on Twitter at UBCSimonTWT. However you get involved with us, we get involved back with you. Why? Because what you say matters. Remember, the views expressed here are those of the participants, not only those of Blog Talk Radio and other distributors of this program. Our production associate is Mandolin. Andy Toews, Blog Talk Radio General Manager, with Jay Sonberg, Head of Content. The co-founders of Enterprise, Alan Levy, and Bob Cherish. Tamarvi Televised was brought to you by Audible.com and Amazon Division. Remember, Audible will transform the way you hear the world. For a one-month trial or to get a subscription at a discount price for your first 6 or 9 months, go to audibletrial.com/televised. But tomorrow we televise. I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a fantastic Valentine's Day, President's Day weekend, Chinese New Year, Lunar New Year. Spend it great with the ones you love if you can. We are back on Tuesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific. You know where. Log Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio, Amazon Music, Verbal, and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. Whatever you're up to now and then, please make it safe and make it great. And spend some time if you can with the ones you love. And don't forget, let's face this pandemic now and forever. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.